Hello and welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I am Scott Nye, and I also have
I'm
a
David
co-host.
Bax.
There he is. You know,
Yeah.
if
I
you
wasn't
expect
gonna
me to talk slower this week or something,
No,
he was mid-drink of water when I
I
finished my
had it
sentence.
perfectly
I'm
timed out.
sure.
I'm a professional. Not literally a professional, but I've been doing this for 18 years. No, 17
Wait,
years.
yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
18 feels too long, but somehow 17 feels right.
Who are you, Matt Gates?
Wait, I don't get it. Oh, now I do. All right. Took me a second.
Okay. Normally you would ask how am I think.
Yeah, that was next on my
I
lips.
got thrown off. Well, I'm there's a veritable civil war going on here at Battleship Pretension.
Watch out.
Alex Garland's Civil War, a movie you and I were both looking forward to as Garland fans
Run hot
over
and
the
cold.
Yeah, I think I'm more of a Garland. I've been more of a Garland like acolyte than you,
Yeah.
but we were both looking forward to Civil War, and yet we had very different reactions to it. I was very disappointed. I think for a lot of the reasons that I see other people being disappointed. In fact, I would say I was more than disappointed. We're going to try to avoid spoilers, although I feel like everyone's seen it.
I also feel like it's an easy movie to avoid spoilers on, to be honest. Like,
Yeah, we know what the premise is. It's not
yeah,
like,
there, I mean, there's
yeah.
like things happen in the movie and developments occur, but it's hardly rests on like a twist or anything. It's like pretty much the movie that I felt like it was at the beginning. It just kept being that movie.
So yeah, we're gonna talk about a different points of view, but since I saw it before you did, I'll go first.
Yeah.
I felt that the Garland's attempts to what I saw is make statements about what war does to people without pointing the finger at one side or another of the current American cultural or political divide went so far as to render the movie airless and meaningless, but yet still, he still maintained this sense of serious war brutality, which made it feel insulting to me. That our actual divided country is being used as just Lego blocks, building blocks, and it felt very insulting the way that he kept trying to sidestep making any big statements about what the sides in the Civil War represent
Insulting to whom?
to all of us Americans who are in the middle of the most divisive time in our country's history.
I feel very strongly that the context of that lack of context in the war is exactly the point of the film. And because to me the film isn't about war at all. It could have been about almost anything. It's about, well, I don't know about almost anything. I think it is pointed. It's notable that it has to be about that exact divide that you're talking about and the film's refusal to take sides, because it's not depicting people who are involved in the war. It's depicting the journalists who are supposedly covering the war, but are doing so not out of any vested interest in the good of the country, just out of a vested interest in their careers and their own glorification. And it's really about, and I'm not sure the extent to which I agree with this, but I think it's a theme worth exploring in the current era, the way that journalism just feeds a certain sense of narcissism and doesn't do anything to provide the very context that would help save the conflicts that it supposedly is trying to cover.
I don't deny at all. You see how we're doing an actual debate where I'm not interrupting you, I'm not like trying to Ben Shapiro you or vice versa. No, I don't disagree at all that the lack of context or the lack of backstory of who's on what side is intentional. I just think it was handled incredibly clumsily, especially I would say the moment, like I said, we're not getting into spoilers, not that there are many, but the moment that Kaylee Spaney's character referred to an historical event within this world called the Antifa Massacre, my eyes rolled just about out of my head. Because it's so boneheadedly obvious in the way that he is not saying this event in which a bunch of Antifa people were massacred, nor is he saying this event in which a bunch of Antifa people massacred someone. And also, like, taking, I don't know, I mean, when people use the word Antifa seriously, it's always very silly to me. It doesn't actually mean anything. And so that felt like it's clearly, he's clearly this that gets to my point of, like, he's clearly turning the actual divide of the country in, like, he's using that as grist for the mill, but he is going so far as out of his way to not say anything about it that, again, yes, I kept feeling insulted as an American by this movie, especially once we get into, and I will, I to your point about journalism, I think that is actually a good read that I hadn't really thought about, because I had just seen the journalists as a way to get alongside the war without being on a side, and that was more of his point of view. But maybe I'm so, like, sure in my conviction that journalism is a societal good that it didn't even occur to me. Back to what I was saying, I think when, yeah, the Antifa massacre thing was dumb in a way that it was insulting, and then the Jesse Plemons sequence is brutal in a way that I felt insulted. It felt insulted. Like, you're going to depict what I thought was a really, really difficult scene for me to watch. But again, in the service of nothing, it felt exploitative.
I mean, I guess yes. I guess I just don't have a problem with the film being a tad exploitative, or at least very exploitative. It like I said, it's kind of baked into its premise of taking, like, the idea of something that's been talked about for at least the past 8 years as, like, some weird inevitability that the media is both cautious of and seeming to actively stoke the tensions of. And I think it is pretty well summarized in that scene, which I don't think it's giving much away. His scene is plastered all over the trailers, and it pretty much starts and ends in the directions you would expect.
And see, I completely avoided trailers for this movie because it was one of those that I was like, I know I'm going to see it.
Well, this is because you
I
don't
don't
go
want
to the
to
movies,
miss it.
David. If you went to the movies, it would be unavoidable.
I do go to the movies. I would say I much less often go to the movies that have, you know, these trailers, I guess.
So
You
mainstream
know?
cinema, the popular culture.
I've seen the trailer for what's the, like, the comedy that's like June from the Pharmacy or whatever it's called. I've seen that trailer. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't think I've
Oh,
seen
it's
this
like
one at
a
all.
it's like a dark comedy about a girl who works at a pharmacy, and, like, what is it? Drugstore June. See, that's the kind of thing that I'm seeing multiple times, because I'm going to see indie movies at the Lemley and seeing drug. I've seen the Drugstore June trailer multiple times, but no, I did not see the Civil War trailer.
Yeah, this is just by way of saying that, like, I without, like, giving away too many specifics, I feel like we can talk about the tenor of that scene, which, yeah, is exploitative in the way that it, like, very much creates an antagonist whose alignment the film resists declaring. And I will say that, like, so the basic setup of the film is, like, there's these Western forces of the United California and Texas who are going to war against the government to try to overthrow it. And I think it's notable that the journalists are aligned with them, not out of aligned sympathy, but purely because they get access through them. That the government side is denying access to journalists and apparently shooting journalists, but the Western forces side is like, you guys can come along and depict what's going on. And so these two soldiers they come across, one is played by Jesse Plemons. We don't really know who they're fighting for, just that an early line suggests that they've kind of taken this conflict into their own hands and, like, found a way to do what they want to with it, which seems to be, like, a recurring theme throughout the kind of stops they make along their journey to Washington, D.C. And which honestly is like kind of reflected in the journalists too, that they're not too, like I keep saying, they're just not too invested in the actual conflict. They're just using it towards their own means.
Like I said, I do see what you're saying. I think, and I'm running out of points here, but I had something to say about that. I do think you mentioned the California Texas thing. That, alongside with the Antifa thing, is like, I know I don't want to do the thing of like editing the screenplay or whatever, but like, I think if there had been fewer specifics, the lack of context thing would have worked. But by name checking Antifa, by specifying which states make up the Western forces, it raises questions that it can't help but raise questions that it has no interest in answering and doesn't want you to ask. And so
I disagree that it doesn't want you to ask them. I just think that it's creating scenarios that are abstract enough that we can't fill in the specifics that the film and the journalists are denying us. That like it'd be so much easier to say like, well, the Western coast states or whatever are aligned, even though if you look at the politics of those individual states, they're as diverse as the rest of the country. But it'd be easy to make this like a red state, blue state thing by kind of abstracting it out of that while using familiar iconography within that, like the Antifa massacre. It's rooted in a context that we can imagine different eventualities of, but we can't totally define. I think if it had been any closer to our actual political reality, it'd be a lot weaker.
That's why I was saying go the other way. Don't give less information. Give fewer specifics. I
I
had
don't
one
know.
other
It's
thing I
I feel
wanted to
like
say. Oh,
it's
good.
you want to stoke the audience's curiosity though to a degree, and I think it's productive to ask the kind of questions that I think people are like, well, not to disparage you too much, but I think people like you are disparaging the film for, of like, it's not giving you the specifics that it is pointedly refusing, but I think the film wants you to think about those.
To be clear, I've said it like this is the third time I say it. I don't want more specifics.
Right, but you do.
I want Alex Garland to not try to have it both ways, I guess is what I feel like
Oh, see, I
to.
think that having it both ways is very key, and I mean, it's almost like a kind of like rote phrase in talking about journalism now, is wanting to have it both ways.
Well, back to the journalism thing, since you brought it back to that. I do think that, and this is a common complaint about war films, whether they depict real war or a fictional one. Kirsten Dunst's character, at least, does what's the word? Enunciate a point of view at one point, which is that just that as a career war photographer, she felt that her work was helping to prevent future wars, and it isn't. So that does at least seem to align the main character, if not the film, with an anti-war point of view that the, kick-ass action suspense sequences that he builds undercut, because like that, the action scenes, especially the lengthy like final one, are really well done and exciting.
Yeah, but I think it's the excitement that the people involved are feeling most, especially the journalists were aligned with. I think her notion that she felt like her work could prevent this is the lie is revealed by the notion that she's continuing to do it. Like, she is saying out loud that she thought that her work would be important enough to prevent future conflicts, acknowledging that it isn't, and still doing it anyway. And what does that say about what's really driving her along the way? It's the thrill, it's the excitement, it's maybe just the habit of it. And I feel like all that is embedded in the approach to the action scenes.
You know what? Sometimes I just wish I had seen the movie that you saw.
The last thing I want to
but
say is that I don't exactly love this movie. I think it's dramatically clunky in a few sections, and the dialogue is especially very blunt, but also just kind of dull in a lot of ways. Like, there's that whole scene where it's like, now it's time to learn Kirsten Dunst's backstory, and so literally, like, Kaley Spain is like, so tell me about your past, and it's like, there's probably some better drama to build in here. I just think that Garland's gifted enough at assembling sequences, and I think the architecture of the film is strong enough to overcome my kind of minute-to-minute doubts.
Yeah, that's why, and again, not going to get into spoilers, but I think everything that I'm saying can be summed up in the scene with Carl Glusman as a Western Forces soldier that they end up getting pinned down with. I think his performance and the other soldier whose name is Jin something. I looked up the actor. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, they're both really good.
That's a great scene. It has more like color and liveliness than a lot of the other scene. And also the whole point is that we like of that scene is that there are no specifics at all. No one knows what's happening in that scene except for one person is trying to kill the other person. Anyway, oh yeah, other dumb thought I had, but this is like I know I've said this before, and then I know I've been saying it for as long as I've had a podcast, so I'm not stealing it from anyone. And I know
Okay.
you have also referenced that I'm a better writer than I am, who has called this thing out. That like, if I start nitpicking the like logic of certain things, it means the movie's not working for me. The movie's not working. It's not that the movie's
Right.
not working because of those things. Anyway, do you remember who you were talking about that you like, who put it more
Yeah,
succinctly than that?
I'm almost positive I got it from Matt Siller's site, who put it as the things you don't like when you already don't like the movie.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. That's what I should call. So one of the things that I don't like because I already didn't like the movie was like as they're driving through like, you know, there's wreckage on the road or they're driving through like a bound out thing. There are always things that are still smoldering and smoking. And I feel like we're supposed to think this is like this happened a while ago, but the smoke makes it feel like it just happened. But I don't know. It seemed clumsy in a world building way. But again, that's one of the things I don't like because I already don't like the movie.
Yeah, it's definitely a very minor point. I mean, it's hard to say because, like, when they're on this road trip, they do come across active combat zones. And so it's either is possible that somebody did just leave it and the fight had just taken place, or they just didn't think through it as a production design choice.
All right. Well, yeah, we had a listener who wanted us to get into Civil War, and I like that we did it in a civil way.
No, I mean, I wanted to get into it too because we started talking about a trivia, but three out of the four of us had seen it and one hadn't. And so we were only able to get to it so far.
Yeah, I think, well, this weekend, actually, I mean, by the time you're hearing this, it's pretty much it's already happened, but TCM Fest is this weekend, so I won't be home very much, so Natalie is gonna see Civil
Perfect.
War. So by the time you see Natalie again, she will have caught up and seen Civil War.
Look forward to grilling her.
Yeah, I wonder which side of the because at trivia it was Julie and I on one side, and then it was
Yeah.
you and the bus boy Zach, who wears a different
Yeah,
death hat every week we see him. We love Zach. He
is his name Zach?
it is,
That's
which
so
is
funny because he's obsessed with Zack Snyder.
he's a Zack Snyder super fan. We talk about Zack Snyder movies all the time, except he has not seen Legend of the Guardians, the Isles of Ga'Hoole.
What kind of fan?
Which I may or may not be joking when I say is my favorite Zack Snyder movie.
Who can say?
I can't even tell if I'm joking or not. But before we get into the topic, I want to tell you about tweakedaudio.com. Tweakedaudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great. They sound great. I use them each every day of my life. Today, I was listening to some selections from the new Adrian Lenker solo album. Which I don't remember what it is called. But Adrian Lenker is the front woman for the band Big Thief, and I'm going to use this opportunity to I don't know, air some grievances about the culture.
Okay.
Because I think like I really resist like stan culture. But
Sure.
I think it's infected even like indie rock in some ways. And here's the example. Well, here's like I'll give an older example of stan culture, because this goes way back to, I think, when Jon Stewart was still hosting The Daily Show, like on the regular. Or maybe it was SNL. I don't remember. Anyway, this was back before One Direction broke up. So that's how long this was, like a decade ago, right? There was a joke on one of these type of comedy shows about One Direction being a terrorist organization. Just a, not a very funny joke, but just like a throwaway
Sure.
joke. But a lot of One Direction fans were like, how dare you? Because one of the members of One Direction is Muslim. And I wanted to be like, do you stans not realize that these comedy writers, there's zero chance they know anything about the biographies of the
Right.
people in One Direction? But that's stans. But now I feel like I saw a tweet, and this is even still a couple of years ago, but it still sticks in my craw, about the band Big Thief, that accused like cishet male rock critics of essentially like virtue signaling by celebrating Big Thief so much because the front woman is a queer woman. And
Okay.
I saw that tweet get like go viral within like that sort of circle, and I think Big Thief have been over the past, half dozen or so years, one of the best bands on the planet. I learned from that tweet that Adrian Linker identifies as a queer woman, because I don't, this is my like old man thing, is that when did it happen that we're supposed to know everything about the artist whose art we like? Can't we just like the art? Are we
Yeah.
like, do we have to be stans of everything?
This is something I think about a lot in several regards. I think most, I mean, the most kind of immediate concern for me is always just pronouns, getting those correct. And like, I do try to put in the research as much as I can on when I don't know. And so there's the line, right? 'Cause like, I feel like we should get those right, but where then does the line fall off, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and I feel like, I mean, just last week I talked about like my Blue Sky thread of all the movies directed by women that I've
Yeah.
seen, and like before I update those, I always confirm pronouns. But I guess I don't know. Maybe I would like to someone to maybe weigh in on this, because I feel like, you and I and Julie, we were doing, I think it was the fall movie preview, maybe the summer movie preview, and I misgendered the Flash. I've already forgotten their name, Ezra something.
Ezra Miller.
Ezra Miller, I misgendered the Flash, and I
I
felt
like that you're
bad.
just referring to them as the
Yeah,
Flash.
I misgendered Ezra Miller, and Judy corrected me, and I apologized to the listeners or anyone, and then from then on, I've used the correct pronouns. I mean, is that like, is that such a bad thing?
No, totally. I just.
That's what I'm saying. If I misgender one person once because I don't know, once I'm corrected, if I accept the correction gracefully and apologetically and move forward, I don't know. Do I need to have done all the research beforehand?
The problem then is that, like, if you're writing a review, if you're just sending out a tweet,
Oh,
if you're
yeah.
on a podcast with somebody else who doesn't know the pronouns or doesn't
No, that's
know
true.
the relevant biographical information, that you could be putting out the wrong impression
Yeah, no,
of
you
yourself, of the
reminded me that
person.
if I were writing a review, I would absolutely confirm pronouns before I used them. So,
And then there's, like, kind of, I think, increasing questions around people portraying people of comparable, if not identical, sexual orientation and gender identity and stuff like that. And so, I mean, I don't, I guess it just depends on where you fall on that. So, like, if you're covering a film where someone's playing a gay man and the actor is not gay or is gay, is that something you want to consider in the course of your review or not? I guess that's kind of up to you, but you also have to accept that some people might take issue with you not addressing it.
that's interesting. Yeah, I think maybe this is my cis privilege showing. I think if it were a gay person playing an odd gay person, or the other way around, I probably wouldn't mention it. But if it were a trans person or a non, if it were a cis person playing a trans person,
Right.
I absolutely would and have mentioned it in reviews. So maybe I'm not woke enough. Oh my God,
No,
am
I
I
mean,
not
I
woke enough?
don't know where the line is exactly myself. It is something I think about a lot.
But I guess now I need. need to like research the biographies of every member of every band that I like.
Well,
Anyway.
I can't remember what this started with. Was it like somebody objecting to like somebody disliking a band because there was a queer member?
No, the accusation of the tweet was that cishet white indie rock fans, or I guess it was more about critics. People like me were essentially virtue signaling. Like,
Oh, sure.
it's probably a queer woman trying to ally point thing. We're talking, and this is the case with all of her music. It's beautiful. Yeah, also apparently it's named after a is that a oh my God, who's the other Kurosawa? Kiyoshi?
Yeah.
Isn't Bright Future a Kiyoshi Kurosawa movie?
Not one I've seen or have heard of, but possibly.
Just last night I watched one of his early movies, which has a couple of titles, but I think recently remastered and released under the title Bumpkin Soup. And it's awesome.
All right, right on.
It was apparently like it made or like developed as kind of like a sort of like softcore like erotica movie, but then they were like let's make it more of a real movie, but instead he just made it like super weird.
Okay.
And it has all of this like I think kind of Godardian thing of like characters like holding up signs with like political or cultural or psychological statements like right to the camera and stuff. Really, really interesting movie. But also still, I mean, hey, if you want to see a bunch of like nudity and softcore sex, it's also still there.
And who doesn't?
And it's called Bumpkin Soup, which is a funny name.
It is.
All right. But Adrian Linker's new album is under good my Tweaked Audio on your buds that are available at a low, low price at tweakedaudio.com. But if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get one third off that low, low price and no shipping charges. So please go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Okay, we're back from our break. We are ready to talk about this week's topic. Now we did back when the most recent Sight and Sound poll came out. Neither of us was asked to participate. Not bitter.
A gross oversight.
Yeah. Okay, they am bitter. But our friend Rico was, so we had him on to talk about it. But at least the people over, I don't know who runs. I say the people and they shoot pictures, don't they? It's probably just like one person.
I'm not 100% sure, but I do feel like it's one very neurotic guy.
Yeah. So at least one of us was asked to participate in a poll called Beyond the Sight and Sound Canon, in which people and you didn't have to be asked. It was also an open poll at some point, but so there were critics' votes and other votes. I don't know. But anyway, we were asked to nominate up to 100 movies that not only didn't make the Sight and Sound list, but didn't get a single vote in the 2022 Sight and Sound poll. And that has produced a new list called Beyond the Sight and Sound Canon, a list, it's a nice, easy to navigate list of 1,031 titles. Or I have 1,030, I can't remember exactly.
1,030, yeah.
1,030 titles. We're going to talk about just the results of the list, but also I think maybe the idea of the list, the approach, and I don't know what are your let's get into it, shall we? What are your overall thoughts?
It's more of an interesting exercise than result, I would say. I think there's a notion when you put together a list of Any number of greatest films of all time. I mean, and 1,000 is certainly a lot. That one could watch the films on there if one were so able and so daring, and come away with a baseline appreciation of cinema and something that's roughly communicable. I don't know that this works well on its own. It was like, I'm glad somebody did it because it's like an interesting question to ask. I just don't know that the resulting list tells us that much about cinema history and culture and illuminates the medium any more or any better than the Sight and Sound listed.
Well, I don't think it's supposed to stand on its own. I do think it is meant to be an addendum, like once you're done with that.
Once you're done, like by then you should be stoked on any number of potential side streets and avenues
Right.
that have nothing to do with this list. I just think that, like, as I scrolled through this list this afternoon, I had a hard time saying that at least of the, and according to Letterboxd anyway, 472 films on it I've seen,
Didn't even do that.
that it is terribly informative. I think the open nature of it too is kind of hampers it in a lot of regards, most especially just looking at kind of the top 25, which like the website doesn't put it in order of any kind of ranked order, but if you download their spreadsheet, it'll tell you the number of votes each got, and that's in one column. So if you start by that column, you can kind of create a ranked list on your own.
Yeah.
And so the fact that, like, in the top five you have Spike Jonze's Her and LA Confidential and Uncut Gems, I think tells you more about the voting body than it does anything about the cinema.
You know what? You got to a point that I actually absolutely wanted to get to that I was also a little bit disappointed in because it went so against what I did with my ballot, which I'm not going to read my entire 100 film ballot, but you can find it at They Shoot Pictures, don't they? Or theyshootpictures.com. Yeah, recency bias. That's
Oh, that it's interesting that that's what you took from what I said, because that wasn't, I like the recency of those
no.
films wasn't my concern.
Okay, well, what did you mean? Because that was a big, or maybe you're right that recency isn't the concern, but that they're not obscure.
I don't even mind obscurity. It's just like it's very bro-y. And like
Okay.
Re Reservoir Dogs is in the top 10, Blade Runner 2049 for God's sake is in the top 15. In the entire top 100, you know, I counted this afternoon, but I'm pretty sure I'm right that there are only two films directed by women. You know,
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
I appreciate that they kind of threw the doors open and, you know, blew up the notion of quote unquote gatekeeping, but sometimes some gatekeeping does help.
I will address, you said like, I can't remember how you said it, but like Blade Runner 2049 of all things or whatever, putting this list together or my nominees together was not easy because I was limited to things that hadn't gotten a single vote.
Right. Oh, totally.
So I don't really blame like people for choosing what they chose in that sense, but yeah, the I will go back to my issue with the recency bias. The most recent, as an intention move to avoid this, the most recent movie that I nominated on my list was from 1989. Actually, I had a bunch from 1989, but I stopped there.
How'd you pick that year?
You know what? I basically like started at the beginning of cinema and kept adding films until I got to 100 that I wanted to put
Okay.
on there, and at that point I was at 1989. So that's how I got there, is I hit 100 with The Little Mermaid, which I think did make the final list. I can't remember now.
Let me see. Yep, it did. It is down. It got 18 votes total, so it, you know, there's like a, oh gosh, this is probably two dozen way tie of other
Yeah.
films that got 18 votes.
Yeah. Yeah, if you, I mean, you and I are both looking at, or I'm looking at the spreadsheet right now that we downloaded from
Same,
SpaceShoot
yeah.
Pictures. But if you go to the actual like list on the site, it will show you which of the critics voted for each thing, which is interesting to see sort of like who I'm in like the hand holding club with on certain things.
Sure. I do want to get back to the recency bias thing because I think this is a big area where you and I kind of differ, is that which I think I differ from a lot of cinephiles on, is that I think recency bias is good. And because like when the Sight and Sound list came out, there were so many people that, and this is like to me so representative of the pervasive misogyny that still courses through much of cinephilia, that's people decided to pick on Portrait of a Lady on Fire of all the recent films that have been that had made the list, and there were, probably a solid dozen others that they could have picked, but they picked on Portrait of a Lady on Fire, maybe because it's beloved by women or something, I don't know. But I think that's good. Like the list is, any of these lists are meant to be a snapshot in time, like kind of throwing the needle down on the record. The one I often point to is that La Ventura was like number two or three on the 1962 Sight and Sound list. And that was 2 years after it came out. And like sometimes it's worth like shooting your shot and making the volley and like saying like these things mattered in this time. And sometimes the last, I mean, sometimes they won't, but if they last, it's like all the better.
Well, I mean the La Ventura thing, because I don't necessarily disagree, but the La Ventura thing is like there's also the fact that there's another 60 years of movies since then.
Oh, 100%. But you could see an element of the culture at the time being like, that movie just premiered. Surely this isn't one of the greatest films ever made. There, all these silent masterpieces are missing, or whatever else.
Well, I guess I don't necessarily feel, I don't know, I think academically I see your point, but in practice what I see is yeah, a lot of bros just going through their Blu-ray collection and nominating movies. Yeah, this episode is already very interesting because I like that we're not just going through the list. We're actually talking
Yeah.
about it philosophically. Because I do have like just little like things about the list I want to say. But the critics polls, if you've, I don't know if you've scanned through any of the critics like individual ballots,
Not much.
but a part of me does wish, and maybe this is the elitist pro gatekeeper in me, that we could see the version with just the critics' ballots.
Sure.
Because I think scrolling through them, mine is one of the more basic and populist ones.
And you've got a lot of fairly obscure stuff on there. I did go through your list at least just to get a baseline of where you're coming from with it.
but very few of mine compared to a lot of other lists are not in English. I mean, maybe like a third of them are, maybe a quarter of them are, but still compared to a lot of lists, because these were international critics.
Right.
So yeah, I felt that mine were, that I had some obscure stuff on there, but when I started going through the list of the other critics' ballots, I was like, oh man, I've got a long way to go.
Well, let's see. I mean, just at a glance, there's plenty of films from the US that ended up on the final list, so you couldn't be in the, have been in that bad a company. Let's see.
No, but I'm saying those are the open voting things, is my
Oh,
guess.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I thought we had one that was just my list. I don't know if Heather's would be on there.
Sure.
Maybe Poltergeist would. Speaking of like other critics, I know.
Poltergeist is on the list.
No, I'm saying, but looking at the other critics, because I nominated Poltergeist, and so did Ryan Swinn, who's an LA critic who I'm
Yeah.
like kind of Twitter and Blue Sky friends with. But this is, I'm like an awkward guy because I was like an awkward like nerd growing up. And I'm sure we all are. We're movie geeks. I'm sure we're all
Yeah.
awkward. But like, I met Ryan Swinn in person once at AFI, and then like at LA Festival of Movies a week ago, I saw him again, but I was like, and I knew who he was, but I was like, he probably doesn't remember me, so I didn't go say hi. I
You
probably
could
should
totally say
have.
hi. Ryan
No, I'm sure I
is
could
like
have, but like, I'm the
impossibly
like
nice.
awkward, yeah. But I'm like the awkward person who's like, yeah, who, yeah, like, and I could say like, yeah, we not only we met once, but like, we fucking like each other's
Yeah.
tweets all the time. Like,
Oh, you tweet about French movies. Ryan will be right there.
okay. anyway, but he and I both nominated Poltergeist, so
Nice.
yeah, in good company there. Yeah, let's get into the list a little bit. That yeah, you mentioned that Her is first based on number of votes.
Yeah.
Second is Rafifi, which is also the top of my list of really no one voted for that for the Sight and Sound.
Yeah, there are definitely a couple on here as I was kind of scrolling through that's like I was very shocked, and it's kind of like sometimes sign of the times kind of thing, but also sometimes like I have no explanation for that.
Yeah. And then also one that I know I nominated, I'm sure it's on here somewhere, Through a Glass Darkly. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah,
That's
it
like
is.
number 29. That's another one that I'm like, really? That got no votes for
I'm
the
not
Sight
that
and Sound?
surprised. I mean,
I
like,
love Through a Glass Darkly. That's
oh,
a
so do
top
I.
tier Bergman for me.
But the difference with this poll versus the Sight and Sound poll is the Sight and Sound poll, you only have 10 votes, and that's you don't have 100 that you can do.
That's
And
true. Yeah,
Ingmar
I did
Bergman
not
has
think
a
about that.
long filmography, and so he has. There's five here on the Beyond the Canon list, and let's see. At a glance, Through Glass Darkly is definitely the most famous of them. Yeah, for sure. But I'm
Okay, what
also
else did
not.
he get on there?
Passion of Anna, The Magician, Magic Flute, and
I nominated The Magician. In what?
From the Life of the Marionettes.
Okay. I
The
also.
Magic
Oh,
Flute,
go
in
ahead.
case you didn't hear that one either.
Yeah, I did. I nominated The Magician as well, and I also nominated All These Women, which I know is not considered top tier Bergman by a lot
Yeah,
of friends, but I love All These Women.
so do I, but I'm not, I guess I'm not surprised that, well, I'm certainly not surprised that they make this list, but I'm not surprised that any of these didn't get votes on the Sight and Sound list because, I mean, he's just got a dense filmography. Through Glass Darkly is the most surprising of them, but I wouldn't have been surprised by most Bergman films that would show up as being unvoted just because he has such a thoroughly dense and revered filmography that it's tough to get them all, you know?
Yeah. All right.
You've also got me curious about which filmmakers kind of had like the biggest presence here. Oh, Anthony Mann has a lot. There's
Wait, there's a way to
seven.
see that.
Well, you can sort by the column of directors, but it's not going to automatically tell you what's got the most because it's just going to go alphabetical. But yeah, Anthony Mann's got six. I'm going to see if I can scroll through this and
No, Fritz
find.
Lang has the most. I know I saw that somewhere.
Oh yeah, because they did. There's a separate tab. Yeah, Fritz Lang's got the most, then Truffaut, and Anthony Mann is tied with a few others at six.
Wow, yeah. Did I nominate any Anthony Mann? Because I know I'm a bigger fan than you are, but I don't
Yeah, I
know if I
am
did.
not an Anthony Mann guy.
Yeah.
Then looking through the director's list, noticed that Woody Allen has six, which again, like Bergman, he has such a dense filmography that you could see a lot of his not getting voted on, period, or just because of that density. But I also wonder if there were a lot that didn't get voted on either poll just because he's fallen so far out of fashion and favor.
Right. Yeah, I'm
Wow,
trying
shocking.
to. Well, go ahead.
No, I was never mind. I was reading the list wrong. I was gonna, it looked for a second like everyone says, I love you got the most votes of any Woody Allen film, but I was just, I had the column sorted weird.
I'm trying to. 'Cause did you download which spreadsheet did you download?
It's called Be the SS Canon underscore A List dash
Okay.
100,030 frames. Here are films.
Okay, so I did the master list one, which has the A-list as one of the columns, but also has the orphans, like the films that only got one vote.
Oh, interesting.
So I'm trying to see based on this, did anyone else vote for all these women? Oh, but it only has the, it doesn't have the English language titles. So you know what? I have no fucking clue.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well. No, I've lost track. We were having such a good conversation that I got sidetracked, like trying to sort lists and stuff like that.
Oh, I was just the only thing I was on before then is looking at directors
Oh,
who
right.
were kind
Okay.
of most represented on this list.
Who is the most represented female director?
That's a great
Is it even
question. Let's
on that?
see. Yeah,
Did it
right.
make the list?
Let's see. Scrolling. Gotta keep scrolling. Maybe that's already answering the question. Bunch of dudes. Xavier Dolan is already more represented than any woman. Agnes Varda, with two films, is
Wow.
at least tied for the most represented. I'm not going to go through all the rest of the twos because there's a lot of twos, but.
Yeah, that is a bummer. And yeah, I'm looking at the they received 839 ballots. I'm trying to see how many critics total. I'd have to count the ballots unless it says. It doesn't look like it does. I would like to see the critics only version of this, because maybe that would be like more of a helpful guide of what to see, as opposed to like just a reflection of what we already know
Right.
people like the IMDb top 250 or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess I like I said, I can see the benefits both ways of like you want to. The most representative sample you can get. And certainly the fact that like the number one film on here only got 77 votes out. I mean, I don't know how many, let's see how many contributors there were, 'cause
Well,
actually.
839 ballots.
Yeah. So out of 839 ballots, who could, all of whom could list up to 1,000 or 100 films,
Yeah.
the most voted film only got 77.
Yeah, this was a must have been quite a project to tabulate.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem, I'll bet to the person who did it, it's fun, but to me it seems like a nightmare.
Oh, 100%.
What's the sorting by votes? What's the highest ranked thing you haven't seen? Because I've never seen, despite being told I should see it since high school, Takashi Miike's Audition. I've never seen it.
That's the same for me, actually. I
Yeah.
long avoided it because for a long time it seemed like the kind of thing I would not want to watch, and now it kind of is the kind of thing I would want to watch. So I just it's kind of somewhere rotating in the
Yeah.
cycle, vaguely waiting for it to pop up on a streaming service I subscribe to.
I was trying to do the opposite. Well, okay. This is going to make me feel bad. If you go to the bottom,
Yeah.
all the films that are tied with three votes, I have seen zero of them.
I think that was the case for me as well. Although I also feel like there was one that I was like, oh, I'm sure David's seen that. Yeah. Oh, wait, no. I saw the Ten Commandments on there, which I haven't seen either version of, but it's a silent version that
Oh yeah. No, I
made
haven't
that
seen
list.
it. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah.
It's not till we get into the four votes that we start getting into things that I've seen, which are mostly more recent things like Lingi the Sacred Bonds and Osama.
I've seen Wooden Crosses, the French film, which is very good. I've seen The Epic of Everest, which is also very good. Let's see what
Wait,
else
what is the
is.
Epic of Everest?
The Epic of Everest is a silent film that's literally
Oh,
about people climbing Everest. It is
yes,
so great.
I have seen that. Kino put out the Blu-ray. I have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have seen that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think those are the only ones for the fours.
Yeah, there's Moana. Oh, wait, it's the 1926 silent
Yeah, there are a
Moana.
couple like that that was like, oh, I've seen, no, I haven't seen that.
Yeah. Like, oh, Last of the Mohicans, not the 1920 Clarence Brown. Last of the
Yeah,
Mohicans.
right.
Oh, I saw 2019's La Llorona. Oh, that's five votes. Okay, so we're into the five votes now. 2003 is The Story of the Weeping Camel. I saw that.
Such a like stock art house title.
Yeah. I wish it were not this 1953 movie, The Net. I wish it were the Sandra Bullock.
Oh, that'd be so great.
There's also a no, never mind. It's not called The Net. It's called The Raft. Wait, what is it? Kim Ki Duck had a movie that might have been called The Net, but I think it might have was called The Raft.
I got
Anyway,
nothing.
that's the
Can't help you
point.
there.
So did you have you looked at if you go to the thing you can, and I'm sure you haven't because it would be the point. On they shoot pictures. Let's see. There's the list of all movies, the 4,366 movies that got at least one vote in the 2022 Sight and Sound poll.
Oh no, I didn't go through that.
Yeah, because if you scan through it, you'll see how hard it was to make some of these
I have no
decisions.
doubt, yeah.
But then some of it, I don't know. I was decrying. Okay, 2016, The Net, Kim Ki Duck. It is called The Net.
Okay.
Good movie, but I know Kim Ki Duck, he's dead now, but got like canceled or Me Too'd, I think. So I used to sing his praises a lot, but now I feel a little bit cautious in doing so.
Even having not seen his films, is that a surprise to anybody?
No, no. So yeah, I was like decrying recent recency bias, but I also feel like at 41 years old, I'm probably still on the younger side of critics who participate in these sorts of things.
Maybe. Maybe not
So
this list, but maybe in general.
yeah. So as much as I'm like, oh, really, you had to vote for this, Uncut Gems movie's like not even 5 years old, but I do feel like represented for some of the movies of like the 80s that maybe you wouldn't have or clearly didn't get. I mentioned Poltergeist,
Yeah.
but the average Sight and Sound voter is maybe too old to take something like, let's see,
Well, I saw Innerspace on your ballot, which I greatly appreciated.
Innerspace, Big Trouble in Little China, yeah, Three Amigos, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid,
Sure, why not?
Excalibur, which is that's on the They Shoot Pictures, Don't They list Excalibur, and it should be. It's one of the coolest movies ever.
Never seen it.
The Mosquito Coast, a 1986 Peter Weir movie
That's been on my list pretty high for a while. I'm just gonna watch it.
I love that one. Crossing Delancey, Heathers. I think Heathers made the final list. I think a lot of these probably did.
Let's see. Yeah, Heather's got 23 votes.
But then, yeah, going back to like being surprised things didn't like, I'm mildly surprised that Sex, Lies, and Videotape didn't get any votes for the Sight and Sound
Yeah, that is surprising.
poll. Yeah.
I was just
So,
looking real quick to see like how well represented each decade was to kind of get a glance at it. And honestly, it looks like a pretty even division from so far. I've got at least the 80s through the 2010s of like, yeah, and going back to the 70s too, like they're all getting like around 105 to 115 films per decade. Yep, some for the 60s. Let's see how the 50s fare. One more. Yeah, 102 for the 50s. Wonder if things drop off. No, the 40s look pretty good too. Okay, the, under 100 for the 40s. That's where things start to drop off. And then, yeah, just shy, a little lower for the 30s as well.
So it keeps
And then, yeah,
dropping off.
the silent era really drops off for sure.
Well, let's see. I mean, I don't want this to make it be entirely a referendum on my ballot, but
Why not?
how many silence did I have?
You had a good chunk, I thought.
Only five.
All right. I mean, that's still what? 5 out of 100 math. That's 5% of
It's
your
5%.
list. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for doing the math for us.
Yeah, I know. I too old fashioned in, I'm not always as sharp as I should be.
Yeah. Yeah, but that, like, with looking at my ballot, I did enjoy getting the chance to like nominate, like, because obviously I mentioned Clarence Brown earlier. I couldn't nominate Flesh and the Devil. That got nominations for Sight and the Sound. So I was able to nominate A Woman of Affairs, which is like the other Clarence Brown Garbo, John, what's his name? John, the handsome guy from those
Gilbert?
movies. John Gilbert, yes. Collaboration.
Yeah.
So yeah, there are a number of those where I'm like you mentioned Bergman, like getting to do the sort of like, I guess, kind of B tier, but I don't think all of these are B tier.
But sometimes it's A tier. Like, I think the most immediate shock for me, besides Rafifi, was seeing that Safety Last was very high
Oh,
on this
right.
list because then necessarily it wasn't on the other list. Like, the fact that nobody in the film nerd circles voted for Safety Last, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, what? I mean, isn't that like the main Lloyd that?
For sure. Yeah. I mean,
Yeah.
easily. Like, and it's not even one of those cases where like people are always trying to jostle for some other Harold Lloyd film. It's like everybody agrees that Safety Last is where it's at.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm looking at my list still, and we can wrap up after this, but I had two by Andre de Tote, Ramrod and Pitfall, both very good movies. But as far as my only Wells, I think, was The Tragedy of Othello, which I think did make the final list.
Yeah, that's the highest ranked Wells.
My only Ozu was Flavor of Green Tea over Rice.
Let's see. That was also the highest ranked Ozu.
Let's see. Godard, I had Le Petit Soldat.
That's on here for sure. I saw that somewhere.
But I also had Hail Mary on mine.
Yeah, Hail Mary is the highest ranked, which I
Okay.
heartily agree with.
Yeah, it's pretty great. I want to find one that I'm an orphan on, that I'm the only person who voted for something. Genre lands the Iron Rose, maybe that's an orphan.
Yeah, you have the list of the one of
Yeah.
all the films that got votes. I couldn't say there.
Let's see. Oh, I let's see. 'Cause yeah, I was surprised that, let's see. Oh, right, but it's in the, I have to look at the
What's going on over there?
foreign titles.
Oh, sure.
I was going to I for Iron Rose, but I have to find the Rose de Fer. Let's see. Did I get No, I am not the only person to nominate the Iron Rose. So yeah, I don't know. I was trying to find something that I'm a outlier on, but couldn't do it.
People love the Iron Rose.
It's the best of the genreland films I've seen. Which I don't know. I want to do an episode someday on genreland in general, or cinema fantastique in general and genreland in particular, but I haven't seen enough, so I need to find a guest who's more well versed in that sort of stuff, like when we had Kyle Anderson on to do Giallo.
Yeah. I certainly cannot help you with that. I still have not seen a single genreland film.
Speaking of, movies that are softcore porn but also art films,
Yeah, I
check
think
out.
part of it is that I just don't care about vampires. I've
Well,
just I
the Anne Rose luckily is not a vampire movie.
Okay, well now you're talking. What's it about?
It's about two young people who sneak off into a mausoleum to fuck, and then when they wake up, or when they come back out of the mausoleum, night has fallen, the cemetery is closed, and they can't find the exit, as if the cemetery is like keeping them there. And so they're running around a cemetery in the dark, trying to find their way out and getting lost, and it's spooky. Yeah.
I can dig that.
Yeah, it's a cool movie. All right, well, let's end on me re recommending The Iron Rose.
Sure.
Even though I clearly wasn't the only one. I was
That's
not the
fine.
only
That's all
voter.
the more reason to check it out.
You can check us out at battleshipretention.com. Should be some Well, Scott's reviewing stuff left and right these days. So you can check out
Man, there
when
are
you're
so
due
many
there.
Jean Reno films on Canopy. Let me just say that,
Oh,
including The
okay.
Iron Rose.
All right. Let's see. You can find that. You can email us at david@battleshipretention.com or tyler@battleshipretention.com. Yeah, go to Tyler's GoFundMe and help him out if you can. That would be great. Or sign up for the Patreon, which also helps him out. Patreon.com/battleshipretention. We're doing some fun stuff over there. There's going to be more fun stuff to come at the Patreon. You can, let's see, I'm on Twitter and Blue Sky at Davey Pretension, on Letterboxd at David Backs. My other podcast is The One Where I Met Your Mother, which I do with my wife Natalie. Scott, what do you have to plug?
Yeah, Twitter and Blue Sky at Rail Tomorrow. Letterboxd, always updating that. So far, sticking with my resolution this year to write something about every film that I see, even if it's just a sentence. And then, yeah, I'll have, hopefully by the time this episode goes up, although we will have TCM Fest again, but hopefully very soon, I'll have a review up of Criterion's new release of Werkmeister Harmonies. I watched the film last night. The transfer is amazing, and the film is
Cool.
as great as ever. I still think it's Bellator's best film. And so I'm going to go through the supplements after we finish recording here, and then, yeah, try to get a review turned around right quick.
All right. Well, look for all that more at battleshipretention.com. Thank you at home for listening.
And we'll get you next time.
Bye.
Bye.